Part 5, Chapter 1. Eyes on the sky of an evening, noting the slow yearly wheel of the constellations, Johnny knew he would have to escape. In about 3 weeks, the year would be up. He had a horrible vision of Chrissy coming into the plains and, if she survived there, blundering onto the mine site. There were many obstacles. It would be almost insurmountably difficult given the search tools of the cyclos. But he set about planning his road to freedom with stubborn relentlessness. Complicating his plans was the self-set goal of an Earth free of cyclos and the resurrection of the human race. Lying awake, he saw the cage revealed in all its ugliness by a rising moon, and he almost ridiculed himself for his own temerity. Here he was, collared like a dog, chained up, locked behind bars, subject to swift detection and swifter pursuit. Yet he knew that even if he died trying, he would more than try. First, he must escape. A key to possible freedom came to him only 2 days later, freedom at least, from his collar. For some reason, Turl had insisted that he be trained in electronic repair. The explanation Turl gave was thin. Sometimes the controls of a machine broke. Sometimes the remote control systems went awry, and the operator had to handle it. That Turl had done the explaining was enough to disqualify the reason. But more than that, in all the time Johnny had been training on machines, he had never seen an operator touch electronic repair. When something went wrong, somebody came screeching in on a tri-wheeled cart from the electronics section and fixed it fast. That Turl insisted that Johnny know how to do it, Kerr had not objected for an instant, was one more piece of the puzzle that was Turl. Whatever Turl wanted of him eventually would happen somewhere where there were no electronics repairmen. So Johnny sat, dwarfed on a bench, learning circuits and diagrams and components. They didn't give him too much trouble. The electrons went here, got changed there, and wound up doing something else over at this place. The little wires and components and pieces of binding metal all made pretty good sense. It was the tools that mystified him at first. There was a thing like a little knife that had a big handle, big to Johnny, small to a cyclo, that did the most remarkable thing. When you turned a switch to the proper number in its heel and put the blade down on a piece of wire, the wire fell apart. And when you reversed it and touched it to the wires you were now holding together, they became one piece once more. It only happened when you were splitting or binding the same type of metal. You had to use a binding substance when handling two different types of metal that you wanted to join. When Kerr wandered off for one of his frequent snacks, and Johnny was tied up alone for the moment in the electronics shop, he tested the tool against the frayed end of the leash. It came apart, cleanly cut. Johnny reversed the switch, held the cut pieces together, and touched the tool to it. They went back together, with no trace of the cut. Johnny knew without trying that it would do the same thing to his metal collar. He looked at the door to make sure Kerr was not coming back and no one else coming in. Then he swept his eyes over the rest of the room. There was a tool cupboard at the far end. He knew better than to have the knife he was using vanish. Johnny parted his leash, raced to the tool cupboard, and opened it. It was a messy pile of parts, wires, and tools. He rummaged in it frantically. Seconds sped by. Then he saw what he was looking for at the bottom, an old tool of the same kind. From far off, he could feel the rumble of returning feet. He rushed back to his bench, and with the newly found tool, put his leash ends back together again. It worked. Kerr returned, lazy and disinterested. Johnny had already slid the tool down into the cuff of his moccasin.
"You're doing pretty good,"
said Kerr, looking at his work.
"Yes, I'm doing pretty good,"
said Johnny.